This episode of All About the Gear is brought to you by Hunt's Photo and Video.
All right, guys, welcome back to another fun and fact-filled episode of All About the Gear. I'm Frederick Van Johnson here with my good friend, Mr. Doug Kay, who knows a lot about cameras and has put himself on the firing line with regard to these cameras to take them out and put them through their paces day in and day out, week in and week out. This latest camera that he got his hands on is the Olympus OMD-EM10, which is in that, I guess, the OMD family. We're going to find out where it sits. So, Doug Kay, it's good to see you again, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Frederick. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm anxious to hear about this camera. I've been hearing about it from all different corners of the mirrorless blogosphere, podcastosphere, whatever you call it. But I want to know what it is. So I have an Olympus. What do I have? The OMD EM5, and they came out with the EM1, which is, I think, the flagship Olympus mirrorless camera, which everyone's raving about. And now we have the EM10. Where does it fit in there? And like just give us the 30,000-foot view of who's it for.
Okay. This is essentially a miniaturized version of your EM5. Okay. It's, I believe, pretty much the same sensor. It's very similar technology, but it is tiny, as you can see. Now, it's not as tiny as your Panasonic GM1, which is literally just a teeny little thing, but it's pretty damn small, I'd say. The camera is an entry-level Micro Four Thirds camera. It is $800, including a pretty usable kit lens, and that's all you need to get started now in the Micro Four Thirds world.
So the EM, are you saying this camera here that I still love, by the way, this is my EM5 with its articulated LCD and its insanely beautiful image stabilization and just semi-retro look and high eye point finder. This is now entry-level mirrorless, this camera? Does the EM10 replace this?
I would say so, just because it's quite a bit cheaper and it's smaller. I think a lot of people who are in Micro Four Thirds already might want this as a second camera, but it's also a great place to start because it's so small. Now, when you get small, you also get in a certain number of challenges, of course. There's not as much room to put on buttons and controls.
Right.
The LCD is the same size as the LCD on the rear of the EM5, but it's actually a higher resolution version. So it's a little different, it's a little better, but it's the same size as what you get on the EM5. The display does tilt, but it does not fully articulate.
Yeah.
It is a touch-sensitive screen, so you can fire that up.
Yay.
Olympus puts their power in the wrong place all the time. It reminds you that you have to unzoom the lens. It's one of those kinds of things.
Okay.
And so here's the touch-sensitive screen. I don't know how well we can see it here, but we'll try. So
just before you keep going, that camera is a mirrorless Micro Four Thirds camera, right? So that lens is not fixed. I can change that.
That's right. Yeah, okay. It's a removable lens. It's in the Micro Four Thirds standard, so you can use anything you want there from Olympic or Panasonic. Mm-hmm. It took me a second to figure out why the touch-sensitive menu wasn't working. Well, there's a little button here on the side of the viewfinder that's hard to get your finger on, and you can push that. That brings up the touch-sensitive menu, or you can leave it on. But the touch-sensitive menu is a little bit funky. You have to hit them twice, and these things on the menu are so small that they're hard to get if you have fat fingers. Like, here's the autofocus choice. You hit it once, twice. Well, I'll get it eventually.
Three times, four times. Yeah.
So it's a little...
Do they sell a stylus accessory for that?
Almost. So now what I did is I got continuous autofocus selected by clicking it twice, and then I still... Oops, it went away. Click that twice. See how well that works? Click that twice.
Yeah, see, you know what happened? The shot that you were trying to prepare for is gone.
Went away. Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's happened to me when I've been out in the field shooting with this thing. So again, if I want to select an autofocus point, I click on this nice big thing twice. Then I have to click on the thing in the middle, and then I can make my adjustment.
Yeah.
So it's to get to something in the menu is at least a three-click process. Double-click, in order just to select the thing you want to do, and then you have to hit the center button, the OK button, to make that active, and then you have to change your settings. So,
what about image stabilization? One of the main things that people keep raving about on these OMDs is the fact that they have near magical image stabilization, you know, for video and stills. Does that camera have that 5-axis image stabilization as well?
The EM5 and the EM1 have a 5-axis stabilization system, and it is just amazing. This EM10 has a 3-axis stabilization. It's really pretty good. It's just not as good as the amazing 5-axis version that you get on the big EM1 and EM5. And it is, you know, it's a tribute to that EM1 that it is just a remarkable device. I mean, I was shooting with Gordon Lang recently from CameraLabs.com. One of the gurus of Micro Four Thirds, I'd say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. One of the main reasons why I shoot Micro Four Thirds is because of Gordon Lang. So
that's right. Thank you, Gordon Lang.
Thank you, Gordon Lang.
But we were both sort of getting a chuckle out of the fact that with that EM1, the stabilization is so good is that if you rapidly pan, there's actually a lag in your panning, and then when you get to the end of your pan, if you stop quickly, it sort of takes a moment to catch up. It's just a wild thing. It's so amazingly good. This is not at that level, not quite that quality, but it's still excellent image stabilization. Another difference is in the weather sealing. This camera is not at all weather sealed, according to Olympus. The OMD EM5 and the EM1 have weather sealing, but this camera does not.
So what about sensor quality in that? It's a 16-megapixel sensor. Is it the same 16-megapixel that we'll find in all the OMDs? And then, you know, in a previous episode, we talked about the Nikon D4S that also has a 16-megapixel sensor in there. Are these all the same sensor, Doug?
Absolutely. No, I'm just kidding.
Absolutely. Ellipsis, not.
Again, the OMD EM1 technology is quite a bit better. We've looked at that. It's just a gorgeous image. I believe that the EM5 is not quite up to snuff in that. It's a great camera. My sense was that this was as good as the EM5 again.
Hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
But again, I only tested this camera with the kit lens. It is a 14 to 42 millimeter, which is in full frame terms, that would be 28 to 84. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Yeah, 28 to 84 millimeter. Yeah. It's really quite good for a kit lens at that price point, where with the body it's only $800. I was really happy with it.
What's the speed? How fast is that? What's the?
It is a 3.5 to 5.6.
3.5, so variable aperture, 3.5, 5.6.
Sort of typical for the entry-level kit lenses, and I thought it was pretty decent. But were the images spectacular? No. I shot with, you know, RAW plus JPEG. I looked at the JPEG. I looked at the RAW files. I was happy with it. I actually have one image that I'm entering into a competition that I took indoors without a flash with this camera. I'm real happy with that image. But those pixels, those 16 million pixels, are not the same as those 16 million Nikon pixels in the D4S. Those pixels.
And what's the difference? I mean, is it different quality of pixels? Do they import them from Madagascar? I mean, why are these pixels different?
Yeah, they're French.
They're French. Yep. Okay, got it.
Got it. No, I think what happens is that because the sensor in the camera is four times the area that's in the full-frame cameras, each pixel is actually four times the area as well. And because it's four times the area, it's actually capturing four times as much light. So if the cameras were of the same sensor quality in every other way, the Nikon D4S would be two stops faster, that meaning it had four times as much light going on into that sensor. Yeah. In fact, I would bet that camera has a sensor technology that's quite a bit more sophisticated. The other part of that is the processors. You know, the Nikon D4S has a battery that's almost the size of this camera.
Yeah.
And that battery, among other things, allows that camera in the Nikon to do all sorts of things with its processor that this camera could only dream about.
Got it. So, Doug, let's a slight diversion down a rat hole here. So, the number 16... What's so magical about 16 megapixels? Like, why, like, Nikon's at 16 megapixels with their D4S, where Micro Four Thirds as a standard has plateaued at 16 megapixels. Sony's come out with 24, 36, whatever, all these different the higher megapixel counts. Why the number 16? Is there some magic behind that?
It's a really nice number.
It has a 1, it has a 6 in it. It's awesome.
In all seriousness, you've hit upon a very interesting point that those of us who have sort of dug deeply into Micro Four Thirds have found out, not that we shouldn't have known it already. When you take a camera like this that's 16 megapixels and they're relatively small, Micro Four Thirds in particular, when you shoot at apertures that are tighter than, let's say, f5.6, if you go up to f8, f11, you're actually starting to get what's called diffraction. Mm-hmm. And diffraction means that your images are getting blurrier, essentially. The light is actually bending around the edges of the diaphragm. And so 16 megapixels is pretty much the top end of what you're going to see in Micro Four Thirds, because as they go to denser sensors that have more megapixels, it just means that they're going to be more critical. So if you can shoot at f5.6 with this camera, if they went to a denser sensor with more megapixels, your tightest aperture might be f4 before you start to see the effects of diffraction. Well, this lens, when zoomed into 42 millimeters, is already at 5.6. So one of the tips for people who are shooting 4/3, especially if they come from cameras with larger sensors, is to shoot more towards wide open, because you will actually see, and it's easy to test. Do it yourself if you don't believe me, but you can run tests and you'll see that as you go to tighter apertures, tighter than 5.6, you can actually see the diffraction coming in. Your image is getting soft.
So as I open up, i.e., like with this particular camera, this is a Panasonic Lumix GH3 with a 1.2 speed or widest aperture. You're saying if I shoot wide open on this particular camera, that it's going to be a softer image than if I was to shoot at, say, 5.6?
No, well, it's 1.2. It's the image isn't softer. What's happening is at 1.2, you're getting a shallow depth of field, but at the point where it's in focus, it should be very sharp with that lens.
Right.
But what I'm saying is the other way around. It's non-intuitive. It's as you go beyond 5.6, as you go to f8, f11, f16, that's where the diffraction kicks in.
Oh.
So what you want to do with that camera is you want to shoot between f1.2 and f5.6. Because once you go beyond f5.6, you're going to get softer images with that lens. And it's, again, not a characteristic of the lens quality. This is physics. This is just the relationship of aperture to the size of the pixels.
It's just plain math. And I'll tell you, in my opinion, which is a sample size of one, obviously, but the world at large looks better at f1.2. I'm just saying. It's just, if I could see everything at f1.2 through my own eyes, I'd be happy. You know, I just want to focus on the subject. So.
Yeah, but you know, if you see the world at f1.2, that's when you have to start wearing reading glasses.
And look at what I have right here, Doug. Look at those reading glasses.
Because as you get older and your apertures have to get wider, you get a shallower depth of field. Oh, this is just way out of line. but the fact is, you know, this diffraction thing is something that's confused people for a long time. It confused me, even though I've been shooting for many years, until I actually dug into it and researched it. And as you get to higher pixel densities, you need to avoid those teeny apertures. You need to shoot more towards wide open. The 36 megapixel Nikons and Sonys, they're full frame. The pixel density on the sensors is about the same as what you're getting on these Micro Four Thirds. Actually, it's one stop better or so. So even on the beautiful D800, the D800E, the Sony A7R, if you want the sharpest image, don't go past F8, because once you go into F11 territory, F16 for sure, you're starting to see the diffraction.
So what about folks that just to beat this horse completely into the ground, what about the folks that are saying, okay, I want to shoot at F16 or F22 because my camera's on a tripod, I'm doing long exposures of flowing water, I'm going to throw a neutral density filter on there. Are you saying that those folks that are trying to do that kind of, you know, artistic, interpretive type photography, they're out of luck because the image is going to be ultimately softer than it would be if they shot at a wider open aperture, and of course the resultant faster shutter speed.
They're not out of luck, but the fact is that at f22, at f22, the combination of the lens and the camera are going to have more diffraction and therefore be softer than at f8. And that's going to be true of any camera and sensor. People who have been doing this long enough and tried to figure it out will find that out. Again, I encourage everyone to go out and test that. Put your camera on a tripod. Go out and change your exposure triangle. So you go from f8 to f22. That's three stops. That means you're going to need three stops more light from going to a slower shutter speed in order to make up the difference. But you'll see the difference in sharpness. You absolutely will.
Interesting. All right, Doug, let's close this off. So looking at that camera, hold up that camera again so we can see it. So this is the Olympus OMD-EM10. So you mentioned that this is entry level. So specifically, let's just like put a finer point on it. Who is this camera for? Is it for the photographer that, like the pro photographer that's already bought into the Micro Four Thirds system and wants a second camera as a backup, or for maybe a spouse or significant other, or who's it for?
I think it's for all of the above. So let's enumerate those one more time. Mm-hmm. It is, first of all, a great camera to get started in the Micro Four Thirds world. If you, you know, wanted to go in on a budget, start with this camera, get the kit lens, $800, you're in.
Yeah.
If you already have a Micro Four Thirds camera and you want a second body, this is a great camera for you. Mm-hmm. If you're in Micro Four Thirds and you really want to be able to travel as light, as small as possible, again, this is a good choice for you. It's a perfectly good camera. And one of the things that we discussed on a previous show, I think it was the Nikon D3300 show. We found sort of a new scenario for this that you just hinted on there, which is, let's say you're going on a trip. You and your spouse or your significant other are going on a trip. You want to take a camera and a couple of lenses. You want a backup. Well, why not take the backup camera and let your significant other, your traveling companion, use the backup camera with one of the lenses as well? And if something goes wrong, you can say, sorry, babe, I got to take the camera.
Right? Yeah. But, use your iPhone. I'm taking the camera.
You're on your own. See ya.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's actually a pretty good scenario for anybody who's using any interchangeable lens camera. Because, you know, put that backup camera to use so it's not just sitting in your bag. Awesome. I think it's good for all three. I think if you want to go into a higher level camera, I think the EM5 is great. I think the EM1 is spectacular. Probably my favorite of all Micro Four Thirds cameras right now would be the EM1.
Wow. Okay. All right, final word on this camera. Buy it, wait, go with the Panasonic GM1. What's the final word?
If I was going this small, I'd look seriously at the GM1. I'd take a look at each of them. The GM1's actually smaller, but the GM1, I'm pretty sure, Frederick, you've got one. I don't think the GM1 has the electronic viewfinder. Is that right?
It does not have an electronic viewfinder, only an LCD.
Yeah, this has a real electronic viewfinder and it looks really good. So this is, if you like electronic viewfinders, go with that. You'll get the extra hump at the top that you'll have to live with. But hey, doesn't it look like an old Nikon?
It totally does. Look at this. That looks like this camera here. Look at this. This is the Canon AE-1. You remember this?
Oh, that's my big brother.
Look at that. It looks like the same camera.
Very good.
The Canon AE-1 is the Olympus OMD.
You just wrote Canon on that, didn't you?
Isn't it the same camera? It's like, wow. This one set the standard for the retro look.
So, you know, it's a viewfinder. If you want that, if you don't want the viewfinder, if you're happier with just the LCD, then the GM1 from Panasonic might be better. I do like the image stabilization in all of the Olympus cameras. That's a winner for me. Panasonic may be a little better in the video department, but for image stabilization for stills, I think Olympus has it made.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I think you hit it right on the head. Panasonic, you know, especially, again, like with this GH3 and the GH4, the new one that came out, these cameras, in my opinion, you know, I stand on this whole platform of multimediography. The Lumix G H3, GH4 series cameras are like the ideal multimediaography cameras, you know, for the photographer that's going to be shooting stills. They need to be able to do awesome photography, but they're going to be doing video and capturing audio with it as well and all this other stuff. They just make a whole lot of sense with the articulated LCD and audio in and all that. But these smaller cameras like this Olympus and the GM1, I put these in the category for myself in my own sort of sphere of things that I do as those cameras that you're going out to dinner, you're all dressed, and you take that camera with you. That's the unobtrusive little body that you take with you to show that, hey, I'm a photographer, I can still take good shots, but, you know, I'm not working right now. This is just an accessory. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm with you, though. I mean, they're marvelous. I love all of them. It's just, you know, as we've said so many times, some of the low-end cameras today are so much better than the high-end cameras of just a few years ago that it's just remarkable.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks a lot for this, Doug. Once again, I think you hit it out of the park. I feel confident and well-informed about the Olympus OMD EM10. Looks like a great camera. I need to, like, as you say, go fondle one. To get my brain around the size of it. Because looking at your video there, you can't really get your brain around how small it is. And if it's smaller than this, this is the EM5, which is tiny. It's fitting in the palm of my hand here. If it's smaller than that, then, you know, that's kind of ridiculously small. So I want to take a look at that.
Yeah, it is smaller. You would like it. You'd be hard-pressed to give up your GM1, though. That's an awfully nice little camera.
Oh, I love my GM1.
So coming up next, we've got the Fuji X-T1 is coming in.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, people have been asking for that.
That's a very hot camera. I love Fuji. I love the company. I love the ergonomics of their cameras, and I'm really looking forward to getting that. That's on the way. And then down the road, at some point, we'll be looking at the Lumix GH4, I hope, and eventually, here's another one we're going to do. We're going to do the Sony A6000. And I'm confident of that because I have one right here.
Hey, where'd you get that from? Did Sony send you that, or did you buy it?
I bought this one.
Wow.
This is my Sony A6000. This is my new street camera, which I just love.
Wow. Look at that.
But we're going to do that. And then, just we don't want to overdo Sony, but the Sony Alpha 7S, which is also in the 409,600 ISO category, is something we want to take a look at.
That also shoots 4K video.
4K video. It's only a 12 megapixel camera. It couldn't be very good.
Of course not, because those pixels are just horrible at 12 megapixels.
Anyway, we got some great shows coming up.
All right, Doug. Thanks a lot for doing this. I appreciate your time. I'm excited to see all these cameras, but I'm staying the course. I'm not buying any new cameras. I'm focusing. Got to focus. I picked a horse. I'm going to ride it until it dies. I'm going to buy another horse.
I'll remind you that in the next show when you have a new camera.
I know, because it happens. You know, it's hollow words. Hollow words. All right, Doug, Kate. Thanks a lot. I'll see you in the next show.
Thanks, Doug. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.